Good evening and welcome. You are listening to CITR Radio, broadcasting live coverage of the BC election from the University of British Columbia.
Well, good evening to you and welcome. This is CITR's coverage of the 1991 provincial election. I'm Ian Gunn.
Hi, and I'm Stefan Ellis. The polls have just closed, and now we wait to see which party, if any, will hold a majority in the legislature. And CITR is pleased to bring you all of the excitement live from our CITR election headquarters in the studios up here at UBC and from our reporters on the scene.
Covering the Social Credit Party is CITR reporter Bill Curry. He's on location at the campaign headquarters of the Social Credit Party. He'll be putting us in touch with the SoCred candidate for the Vancouver Point Grey riding, Richard Wright, a graduate of the University of Manitoba. Mr. Wright bills himself as one of the youngest candidates in this election.
And live at Robson Square, the main NDP election night headquarters, is CITR reporter Luke Dinsdale. He'll be bringing us regular updates on the NDP in general and on the Vancouver Point Grey riding with Darlene Mazzari, the new Democratic candidate and current MLA. Mrs. Mazzari is one of the more high-profile NDP candidates and brings with her quite a lengthy resume of political experience.
And several campaign workers have agreed to give us a call tonight. We expect to hear from the representatives of both the Liberals and the NDP in the next hour or so. And we also hope to bring you live interviews with the candidates from the remaining political parties. CITR's Chris Uren will be with the Liberal Party candidate at their Burnaby headquarters.
And also John Ruskin from CITR, who has kindly donated his regular Thursday night airtime to allow us to bring you this live election coverage, is out on the streets with his roving mic and will be updating us on the public mood.
And right here at Election Control, we'll be bringing you half-hourly non-election news updates from CITR newscaster Jane Tilley. Mark Dinsdale will have brief sports updates and working behind the scenes to keep the election coverage running smoothly. Our production assistants Colin Pereira, Jody Thompson, Phil O'Keefe, David Stowe, and Trevor Brody. Quite a bunch in here with us tonight. We'll also have in-studio guests and from the on-campus affiliates of the main political parties. And it'll be a little while or so before results start to pull in. So while we're waiting, we'll replay some highlights from the interviews we did with the various candidates from the Vancouver Point Grey riding.
But just before we get to that, on the phone with us right now from BC Hydro are Shirley Reed and Michelle Hiley. This very hour coincides with BC Hydro's Lights Out program, which is part of their Power Smart Energy Conservation campaign. What is it you want British Columbians to do right now?
What we'd like everybody to do is turn out all unnecessary lights exactly 8 o'clock, which is right now, and we really stress unnecessary lights, but every light that you're not using in your house, just turn it off. We want to get as many people to join in as possible.
And this is going to last for 1 hour, just 1 hour until 9 o'clock?
Yeah, it'll just be until 9 o'clock officially, but we're hoping that people will carry this epic throughout the year.
Right, okay, and it's just lights you want people to turn out?
Yeah, lights for right now. If you can do your washing or your drying or anything else at another time, that'd be perfect. What we're hoping is we're going to get a lot of television coverage tonight as well. Tune into your news and you can see what the Vancouver skyscrapes look like.
So you've got the commitment then of the TV networks to promote this fact too?
No, we're hoping though. We're hoping. If we made a big enough impact and if all British Columbians really contribute, we're hoping that somebody will stand up and take note.
Now, of course, the reason that we're here, both of us, this evening is because of the election coverage, and that's just what we've started here. Do you think that's going to make an effect on it this evening? I mean, you're going to have a lot of people sitting around at home tonight with the television on, lights on at home. You think that's a bit unfortunate?
Yes, we do feel it a little unfortunate. There's nothing we could do about it. But hopefully when you're watching TV, you can have the excess lights turned off. So,
yeah,
maybe we can take advantage of it.
Well, the decision to choose this hour was made before the election was called, right?
Several months ago. About 5 months ago, actually.
Now, you mentioned people, well, obviously people will be wanting to know who wins the election, but don't you agree that it would take use less energy for people to turn on their radios instead of their television sets?
Good point.
That's a good idea.
So anybody with their radio and their TV on right now, I guess, should walk over and turn off the TV and just listen to us on the radio, right?
We agree with that.
Perfect. Now, what other tips can you suggest for people who want to cut down on electricity? You said lights primarily, but you also mentioned washing and stuff. Are there other things that people can do to cut down on electricity for the next hour?
For the next hour?
Yeah.
I think they have to be aware of different things they can do around their home throughout the year. washing clothes is one thing. I mean, there's other options you can do as well. For instance, you know, using a full load when you're using the dishwasher, you know, buying energy-efficient products around your home, like energy-efficient appliances, refrigerators, watching the EnerGuide rating when you buy products, making sure you're using products with as low EnerGuide rating as possible, meaning that they use the fewest kilowatt hours per month, things like that, just being aware and trying to, you know, be power smart in every way you can throughout the year.
In general, would you say that British Columbians are big power users?
Actually, yeah. When you look at some of the stats, British Columbia is one of the highest per capita users of electricity in the world. Really, that comes from the result of our electricity being relatively cheaper comparative to other sources throughout the world.
In previous experiments like this, because this is not the first Power Smart Hour that you've had, how's the response been? What sort of precedent is there for this?
Last year, I think we run by, I think it's Market Trend does some research for us afterwards, and mm-hmm. I believe last year the statistics were about 88% awareness of Power Smart as a result of that evening. So really for us, it's a good tool to reaffirm and make people aware that they must be power smart, and it's something that we're doing together to make a commitment to the future.
And what sort of drop in power usage have you observed from past lights out experiments?
That's really hard to measure.
Well, approximately, like, was it dramatic?
Last year they estimated it was enough to supply energy for, I believe it was,
I'm not sure exactly what the quotes were from last year.
I don't have it offhand, mm-hmm. but really what they're trying to do is get people to be conscious at one point during Power Smart Month, and hopefully that will raise consciousness throughout the year. So that's more the intention.
To contribute to an effort.
Yeah, exactly, rather than, you know, trying to save X number of kilowatt hours, although it would make a substantial drop if everybody turns out their lights.
Right now, it's the middle of October, the 17th, and the nights are beginning to get colder. The last couple nights have certainly been colder than they have in the past. Is that that's going to make a difference, I guess, after a long spell of warm temperatures? Last night and tonight, people are going to be using a lot more electricity. Is that going to have a bearing here, too, you think?
Oh, yeah. Well, obviously, all sort of environmental other issues are going to have an impact on electricity in your consumption. Like we say, I mean, Power Smart Night is not necessarily a tool to say, okay, let's see how many kilowatt hours we can save for this hour. It's a tool to raise an awareness and a tool to contribute to an ethic.
Can you maybe talk in more general terms about the Power Smart campaign? The Lights Out project is only one of the things that is being done. What are some of the other things that are being worked on in this Power Smart project?
Right now, we've got going in our retail sector, which is across all of our fridge dealers, appliance dealers, do-it-yourself hardware stores, your lighting stores. It's a retail promotion called Buy Power Smart and Win. It's something that we've put together with our trade allies. We're offering $2,000 grand prize of energy-efficient products. And basically, all you have to do is contribute to Power Smart and the Power Smart ethic.
And I'm wondering whether this is mainly aimed at the consumer, the retailer in BC, or whether you're also liaising with industry and some of the bigger consumers of electricity. People, I don't know, maybe the transit people who are running the buses. There must be people in Vancouver and the rest of BC who are using way more electricity than Stefan and I sitting at home watching TV.
Yeah, you're right. Power Smart has been broken up into three areas: the commercial and industrial area, and the residential area. In our residential area, we have 25 PowerSmart programs, but we also have what's called our top 200 commercial and industrial accounts. What these are accounts that we've targeted based on their load that they carry, and we have key account reps that work with them on a continual basis, trying to get them to utilize different technologies, new technologies, more efficient pumps, motors, fans, and basically to do an analysis of their entire energy consumption pattern or ethic that they have themselves. And that goes throughout the year.
Well, thank you, Shirley Reed and Michelle Hiley, for talking to us. And one final thing. Once this hour is over and all the results are in, how will we be able to find out if our efforts were worth it?
We'll let you know.
Well, thank you. That's Shirley Reed and Michelle Hiley. They're from BC Hydro. You're listening to CITR's live coverage of the 19-1 provincial election. The polls closed now about 11 minutes ago, and it'll be a little while yet before we have any meaningful results for you.
And in the meantime, we'd like to replay some highlights from the interviews we did with the various candidates for this riding, and we'd like to start with the social credit candidate, Richard Wright. Mr. Wright listed affordable education as one of his commitments, so I asked him if he believed that education was affordable right now.
Education is affordable right now. As a matter of fact, if we look at the statistics, in the 60s, students were paying upwards of 30% of the actual cost. The trend is going down. 17% is good. I like that.
You must be aware that the university has a three-year plan in which tuition fees will be increasing every year above the rate of inflation. I can't remember the exact percentage, but over 5%. It's between 5 and 10%. Do you support that?
That's something that the Board of Governors decides. The Board of Governors at UBC sets tuition rates.
I realize that, but do you agree with that? You must have an opinion about that.
Well, it sounds high. I'd like to see perhaps pegged to inflation, but that is something that the Board of Governors would have to look at.
Yeah, so if the Socreds are reelected to a majority, you would like to pursue... I guess what I'm saying is you're saying...
Would I have it pegged to inflation?
You would have it pegged to
inflation. I would look at that. I think that's fair.
In our interview with NDP candidate and current MLA Darlene Mazzari, she said that education is affordable, but not for everybody.
It's very affordable for the children of the upper middle class. It's very affordable for the kid that can say to dad, give me the money. It's very affordable for anybody who has been able to save their money and live in our economy by perhaps having free rent at home. It's affordable for the rich. And this is a problem, because if we really want to build a society based on merit and intelligence, we've got to put everybody into that pool. And then we look for the strongest swimmers. But you simply don't extricate or keep out or deny access to half that pool or more by raising the rates. And we'll always have the universities full. There's no doubt about it. The university will continue to expand. By the time we bring in all the rich from across the country, bring in some American students, bring in students around the Pacific Rim, we could triple the tuition and we'd still have the university full. That's not the issue. It's not access for the rich we're talking about. It's equal access based on merit for everybody, especially British Columbian young people.
The Liberal candidate for the Vancouver Point Grey riding is Barry Burke. He responded to the NDP's commitment to freeze tuition fees and UBC's three-year tuition fee plan.
I don't have a problem with freezing tuition fees, because there's a lot of money that could go into education that's not going into education, so the money doesn't have to come from the students. The most obvious example is the inappropriate diversion of federal transfer payments. You know, that's a practice that I'm sure will stop under, I'm even sure the Socreds will stop it. I realize how badly it's backfired. So that'll free up more funds for a post-secondary education. And without getting too far off topic, I generally support measures to streamline government rather than to expand government and get education, post-secondary and primary, and medical services back to being priority one and two. In the province. So I don't think we necessarily have to draw more money out of the students.
Right now there's a sort of a three-year plan that the university has to increase tuition fees at a rate above the rate of inflation. Do you think that's, if the Liberals do have any say in this matter, do you think that's something that they will try to revoke, is that increase?
I think obviously a lot of heat will come on me if elected. And I don't think that tuition fees should outpace inflation.
And that's Barry Burke, the Liberal candidate for this riding. Well, it is now 15 minutes past 8 o'clock, and for about 15 minutes now, the polls have been closed here in the riding of Vancouver Point Grey, and of course, across the province entirely. And we'll get results through in a bit. In the meantime, though, we have a number of reporters out in the field, and one of them has joined us on the telephone. And Mary Hermont of CITR News is also in the studio with us this evening. And we've got Bill Curry on the line. And so hello to Mary, I guess. Welcome to the broadcast.
Hi, Ian.
Hi. And Bill Curry's on the phone. Can you hear us, Bill?
Yeah, sure can.
And so you're, I guess, at SOCRED headquarters. Is there anything happening there?
Not much right now. People are just streaming in. Like you just mentioned, the polls have closed just a short time ago. At the moment, literally, there are more media in the ballroom at the Hotel Vancouver than there are SOCREDs. But we do understand a few things are underway. We managed to overhear an interview conducted with UTV by former social credit leadership candidate Grace McCarthy. Now, Grace McCarthy is not actually here at the Hotel Vancouver, but did conduct an interview moments ago with UTV. She did predict that voter frustration will probably show in tonight's results, and she did criticize those who, quote, ran and hide. They were the ones responsible for the failure of the campaign. Those are some pretty harsh words coming from Grace McCarthy.
So is there a feeling there that this is all sewn up? I mean, obviously it is sewn up now. The ballots are being counted. But is there a feeling at election headquarters tonight for the SOCREDs, including Grace McCarthy, that they've probably not made it this time?
There's general acknowledgement that the polls are probably correct,
mm-hmm.
and that social credit is not going to form the next government, and in fact maybe fighting for several seats to stay in the legislature within the province. In fact, this morning's province newspaper predicted personal defeat for Premier Rita Johnson in Surrey.
Now, are they talking much about where they're going to come in this? I mean, so they've conceded that they're not going to win and the NDP will take this. I guess the Liberals might too. Are they wondering where they're battling here? Is it for second place? Is it for third place?
They see a legitimate shot at forming the official opposition. Their greatest fear is that the poll support shown for the Liberals over the last few weeks may be centralized in the Lower Mainland and central British Columbia. And if that's the case, the Liberals might be able to turn some of that voter support into actual seats in the legislature. If, however, it's spread out over the province, the social credit may cling to some form of hope of forming the official opposition.
So what we're all waiting for at this point in the evening is some results through. Any word there when they're expecting some numbers?
We're receiving numbers now through the networks and UTV, BCTV, and the CBC, and we hope to have some results soon. We understand that many of the candidates from throughout the Lower Mainland will be putting in an appearance at the Hotel Vancouver, so hopefully we can talk to them as the evening progresses, but that may take an hour or two.
We're talking to Bill Curry. He's the CITR reporter at the SOCRED headquarters there in the Hotel Vancouver this evening in downtown Vancouver, where Rita Johnson and her party insiders are all holding camp and will make announcements to the press and so on this evening and hold big celebrations if anything worth celebrating happens to them. You're listening to CITR FM. It's our live election coverage from the studios of CITR. I'm Ian Gunn. With me in the studio, Stefan Ellis and Mary Hermont.
And obviously there are a number of topics that we can bring up for discussion, but I think one of the more interesting ones is the influence of polls on people's voting preferences. And Mary, let's start with a discussion of that. What do you think about it? BCTV has come on the air and has been giving out polls even today. What kind of an influence do you think that has on voting?
Well, there's been a lot of discussion today about polls around campus and around the city as well, and their good and bad influence on the vote is an undecided vote this election. A lot of people walking into the poll booth making that decision right there, and they may have been watching the TV and watched those polls come in. There's been a lot of discussion about the error margin as well, whether that's a call that can be made and whether what influences are playing there as well.
Well, the error margin we were commenting before is, I guess we have to sort of figure out what exactly that means. If there's an error margin of 4.5%, does that mean that the percentage then, I guess it's, I don't know if I'm asking you or just asking in general, does that mean then that their percentage support for the Liberals then would be plus or minus 4%, which would put them behind the NDP?
That's right, and it's up to the station, I guess, to decide whether they're going to put an exact number down or whether they're going to put down a range of numbers, say between 30 and 38%. That's a little safer for them, but obviously that makes an influence if they decide to put the Liberals first, that undecided voter, and I believe it was 21% undecided last night, going into the station may say, well, my vote for a Liberal may count this time, whereas if they had them as second, they might not vote Liberal, it would be a thrown away vote.
Do you think there are people out there that will only vote for the party that looks like it's going to win? Do you think there's some people that look at the results and go, well, I want to be on the winning side, I want to feel good about myself, so I'll vote for the party that has the most support?
Well, I think there's a bad feeling about no matter how loyal you are to a specific party that your vote might be thrown away and you're not using your franchise properly. And I think people like to know that their vote counts and is worth something. For instance, there were people today deciding that same undecided vote, counting signs on their way in to the polls. They drove them by and deciding by that. So I guess signage is important, but it's not quite as effective as the TV polls.
Mm-hmm. One thing that bothers me, I've been asking you questions, but I certainly have opinions on it too, and that is with all of these polls, especially on BC TV, they haven't really explained how they've come up with the questioning. In fact, I have heard interviews with people that have been polled by BC TV. I think especially people supporting social credit that have been asked and re-asked their opinion and almost interrogated to the point of excess about how they stand. And to me, that sounds... I don't have a lot of faith in these BC TV results.
Do you think it's the order of the questioning?
Oh, certainly. I think, I've done interviews with other groups that have had been influenced by public opinion polls, and their main complaint is, well, look at the questioning that they're asking. It's obviously guided towards a certain answer.
That's right. It also depends on who's conducting the poll, of course. I mean, you can't really trust the party polls themselves because they'll be biased for themselves always. But then you've also got to wonder about which newspapers or which news stations are on which party's side. And they're not supposed to be, but they often come out as such.
Also, the other interesting thing is that there have been all sorts of polls. Some, as we've seen with BC TV, have shown the Liberals to be doing quite well. And I think another Angus Reid poll showed the NDP firmly in first place.
That's right.
Which is really, you don't know what to think anymore.
But I think what the biggest thing about polls in this election was the difference of the Liberals before and after the leadership debate. And that was crucial in whether the Liberals had any attention at all before that, and all of a sudden we had this in the middle of the Blue Jays playoffs games. We had startling results for the Liberals in BC elections, and I think that made a huge difference, because all of a sudden here is this third real alternative, as the Liberals had been promoting themselves this entire election. All of a sudden they were legitimized by these polls that were coming out, and certainly a huge 20% rise in their percentage point of support before and after the debate.
One of the things we were going to do earlier, maybe it's a good time to do it, is make some predictions, because it's still quite early and we don't have any finals in. Obviously, there are some writings where there are some polling booths reporting, so we have leading, but it's quite early to say. So it's probably a good time to make some predictions. My prediction, and I seem to disagree with other people in this room, is that there will be an NDP majority, and most of the people that are in the room, they're probably... don't want to go on mic and say their name and say that they said that. But is that somebody on the phone there?
Yes, it is.
Who's this?
Bill Curry.
Hi, Bill. You're still there?
Yes, I am.
Well, what do you think about the influence of polls on the voting public?
Well, I'm not quite so cynical on polls. I don't think they have much influence on the majority who know how they are going to vote. On the undecided, I'm not really that sure it has that much influence on them. I think there are many other more informed factors that they use before they make their choice in the polling booths.
Do you think some people look at the polls and base their vote strictly on who they think is going to win?
If they do, they're probably a very small minority, I would say, because I believe that most people base their decisions, for example, with the Liberals, on the results of last week's leadership debate. And they tend to base their decisions more on what they read about the leaders and what sort of image they're portraying to the media.
Well, what about that 20% undecided vote as of last night?
I'm not aware of the poll, actually.
Well, it just said that there was 21% undecided going into the poll booth today.
If that's the case, then that's an incredible percentage. You know, it's difficult to judge the accuracy of that poll, but
yeah.
It's just difficult to have an idea what influence a poll would have on the undecided. I think
more people are taking the time to look at the issues and look and see what the leaders are saying and making a more informed decision when going into the polling booth.
Well, I think one important statistic to mention is that I think this election has one of the record turnouts for voting. In fact, I believe the pre-election, what's the word for that? The
advanced polling.
Advanced polling. I think double the number of the last election turnout for advanced polls. So do you think that's an indication that people are more interested in the issues?
A large turnout at the polls is very common when there's great dissatisfaction with the present government, and normally voters will turn out in those high numbers in order to send a message, and it's going to be interesting to see what message they do send, because it seems that by the polls that they're quite willing to throw the social credit government out of power, and like I mentioned earlier, high turnout at the polls means that normally there's going to be a change.
That's Bill Curry. He's at Stokard Election Headquarters this evening on the RCITR live election coverage, and you'll be keeping an eye on things there all evening for us, won't you, Bill?
Sure thing.
Okay, well, we'll catch up with you a bit later on. We've got other reporters who are around the city, and we'll be talking to them in a couple of seconds. You're listening to live election coverage on CITR-FM. I'm Ian Gunn, and in the studio are Stefan Ellis and Mary Hermont.
One of the things we should mention is that we're trying to do special... I'm being distracted by things on the television, which is often a problem. But one of the things we're trying to do is give special coverage to this riding, which is the Vancouver Point Grey riding. And the reason we chose that for people that do not live in this riding is because UBC, where we are, is part of this riding. And we have already talked to the candidates who we expect to call in, and the three candidates for the main three parties. Of course, the main one is the NDP. Current MLA Darlene Mazzari, and many say that Darlene Mazzari will win, although if you look at the last election, she won only on a recount. Also, the social credit candidate Richard Wright, who actually is he used to be a Liberal for quite a while. He graduated from the University of Manitoba and now has moved out here, and he's going up also against Barry Burke, who is the Liberal candidate, and we hope to hear from Barry Burke. And right now we're waiting for an NDP campaign worker to call through. I don't know if we have them on the line yet.
Well, in the meantime, I think we can give what the leading polls are coming in. We've got 15 for the SoCreds, 12 for the NDP, 1 for the Liberals, and 3 for other. And it's interesting to note that they had Liberals, 3 for the Liberal and 1 for the other. And for a while, we didn't think that the CBC were going to put the Liberals up in their own category, but they have, and they do, in fact, are leading in 3 seats. And all three leaders are leading in their own ridings.
That's kind of interesting, because Rita Johnston's riding is certainly one where people are wondering if she will be able to outpace Penny Pretty in that riding. But again, these are only leading, so nothing is definite yet. But of course, numbers are flying all over the place.
But by your prediction, Stephen, it looks like you're...
Stefan, sorry.
It looks like you're almost right, but we've got more for the SoCreds than I expected. There was commentary earlier on today on TV that said the SoCreds were only going to get 9 seats, and they seem to be leading in at least 14.
Phil is here. The mic's got a bit of static, but let's try it out.
Okay, well, we are...
Actually, that mic sounds terrible. Why don't you go share the mic with Mary, and that way the listeners don't have to put up with this static. Go ahead.
Well, most ridings have only reported about 6 stations or 6 polls right now, so the numbers we are seeing are going to change rapidly as soon as more polls come in. We're seeing probably the smaller polls reporting, so we just have to wait and look harder. Right now, 16 NDP, 15 social credit, 5 Liberal, and 1 other. And I believe the other is Jack Kemp's riding.
Okay, right now on the line we have an NDP campaign worker, John Richmond. Hi, John.
Hi.
How are you feeling tonight?
Pretty good. I'm not watching the television, so I'm not watching the results. I'm going to hold off until about 9 o'clock.
You're not watching the results until 9?
Yeah.
So all of this talk that you've been hearing us doing about speculation and numbers, and it's all, you're trying to put that aside for now.
Well, yeah. I mean, I remember from previous elections that the first reporting polls usually indicate some pretty wild results. And, you have to wait for quite a while, especially when there's a high voter turnout. You have to wait for quite a while to see what's going to happen in the end.
Now, you've been working primarily with Darlene Mazzari then?
Yep.
And how confident are you that Darling Mazzari will be able to win in this riding?
I feel pretty good about it. You know, I'm not overconfident because I know that Point Grey is not a you know, it's not an NDP riding. It could go anyway. But I feel pretty good. I think Darlene's done a good job, and I think people are going to vote for her more than anything else.
So there's been no polls specifically for Point Grey today?
You mean any polls reporting?
Yeah.
I don't know. I couldn't tell you. Like I said, I'm not going to start following things until about 9 o'clock.
Did the Mazzari campaign conduct any of their own polls previously?
No. Conducting, I mean, you know, we do the phone canvas, but conducting polls is very expensive, so no, we don't do that kind of thing.
I'm wondering, have you been on the campaign right from the beginning?
Yeah, I've been the organizer for the UBC end of it.
So how do you think the campaign has gone? I mean, the NDP provincially, I guess we'll know in a bit, but it seemed to have done reasonably well, and the campaign has been comparatively sort of flaw-free. How's it gone in the local riding, do you feel?
The Point Grey riding as a whole, it's gone very well. Like in Kitsilano, it's gone very well. I think at UBC there's been a few bumps, and I think that, you know, a lot of UBC students tend to be sort of small C conservative, and it's been an uphill battle to try and convince them that, you know, the NDP has changed and it's a new party. So yeah, I'm not too sure about how the polls are going to go at the university.
Go ahead, Ian.
You're listening to Election Coverage. We're talking to John Richmond. He's been an NDP party worker with the New Democrats in this riding of Vancouver Point Grey. And he's joined us on the phone for a couple minutes this evening in our live election coverage. Thanks very much for joining us, John.
Yeah, no problem.
You are listening to live coverage from the studios of CITR News, and we have news and sports for you on the half hour. It is now about 32 minutes past 8 o'clock, 28 minutes before 9 o'clock, and in the studio with us from the newsroom, Jane Tilley, and we'll have a look at sports as well from Mark Dinsdale. Jane's joined us now. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Ian. In non-election news, there's a full-scale search underway off Halifax for a missing armed forces aircraft. The jet has a crew of two. Officials believe it may have run out of fuel during a training exercise and ditched in the Atlantic, about 30 kilometres from shore. Elsewhere, Federal Constitutional Affairs Minister Joe Clark says Canada won't prosper like other major Western powers unless the constitutional crisis is resolved. Joe Clark says that while Canadians have been debating the Constitution, Japan, France and Germany have been building their economies. Clark says in this debate the one certainty is that things would get worse if the country isn't held together. Meanwhile, Ontario's Premier Bob Rae says the province's unique breadth and diversity may be helpful in healing the country's constitutional problems. He called Ontario a microcosm of Canada, containing affluent and poor regions, Anglophones, Francophones, Natives, Whites, Blacks and immigrants. He says that many of its residents can well understand the alienation felt by other parts of the country. Convicted terrorist Indrajit Singh Rayat is suing the BC government and the driver of a sheriff's van. Rayat says he was injured while being transported to his trial last year. He's serving 10 years in prison for manslaughter in a fatal bombing at Tokyo's Narita Airport. In international news, a Texaco oil rig with 80 workers aboard has broken free of its tow lines and is adrift in 12-metre waves in the North Sea. But Coast Guard officials say the crew of the rig isn't in any immediate danger. In the current Commonwealth Conference, leaders have agreed to drop some sanctions against South Africa. Economic sanctions will continue, but restrictions on travel and contacts between officials and individuals will be lifted. Prime Minister Mulroney later said substantial progress has been made in South Africa, and African National Congress leader Nelson Mandela is said to be pleased. In Seoul, South Korea, 16 people are dead and another 20 people were injured, some seriously, in a fire in a nightclub. Most of the victims were apparently overcome by toxic fumes. Police say a man poured gasoline on the stage at the crowded place at Taigo, about 250 kilometres southeast of Seoul, and set it ablaze. Police say the man was angry because he'd been refused service because he was drunk when he entered the club. Elsewhere, the policy-making Central Council of the Palestine Liberation Organization has approved Palestinian participation in a Mideast peace conference. A PLO spokesperson says Palestinians could take part in a joint delegation with Jordan, in line with guidelines set by the Palestinian Parliament last month. The Parliament has set no preconditions. And finally, Yugoslav federal troops are on the march again in Croatia. Three of the breakaway republic's cities are under attack. Thousands of people, including Croat fighters, are reported fleeing Vukovar. Heavy fighting is also reported in Dubrovnik, and air raid sirens have sounded in Zagreb. That's it, Ian. Back to you.
Thanks very much, Jane Tilley, from the newsroom this evening on our live election coverage here at CITR. And now from the sports desk, Mark Dinsdale.
Thank you, Ian. In Pittsburgh tonight, Paul Coffey of the Pittsburgh Penguins has broken the all-time NHL scoring record for a defenseman. Coffey's third-period assist against the New York Islanders gave him 1,053 points, one more than the previous mark held by Dennis Potvin of the Islanders. Coffey has 744 assists and 309 goals in 815 games over 12 seasons. He needs to score one more goal to tie Dennis Potvin in the goal total. In Hamilton, the Hamilton General Hospital reported at 10 o'clock Eastern Time, that's 7 o'clock here, that the condition of Walter Gretzky, who went into hospital late last night, is unchanged, serious but stable. NHL executives are breathing a little easier now that the expansion Tampa Bay Lightning have made their second installment payment 4 months late. The Tampa franchise paid $22.5 million plus interest. Tampa is scheduled to join the NHL next October, along with the Ottawa Senators. In games tonight, in Philadelphia, Andre Lomachin had two goals to lead the Flyers past the Quebec Nordiques 5-3. The loss extended the Nordiques' winless streak to 5. Mark Peterson, Brad Jones, and Mike Ricci had the other Philadelphia goals, while Owen Nolan, Kip Miller, and Mark Vermette replied for Quebec. In Detroit, rookie defenseman Nicklas Lidström and Vladimir Konstantinov scored their first NHL goals as the Detroit Red Wings doubled the St. Louis Blues 6-3. Both goals came in the second period, as Detroit scored 5 times. Steve Chiasson, Keith Primeau, Paul Eisbart, and Bob Probert had the other Detroit goals. Brendan Shanahan scored twice for the Blues, while Gino Cavallini added a single. And that's it for sports tonight. Back to Ian and Stefan for some more elections update.
Thanks very much, Mark Dinsdale from the CITR News and Sports Room this evening with Jane Tilley. They'll be back at about 9 o'clock with more non-election related news and sports.
CITR's election coverage will continue after this.
It was high noon on a hot summer day, and Bud was out in the yard.
Hey, who turned off the water?
I got to see the water for us.
Who said that?
We're Canada's youth.
Yeah.
Oh.
I got to see the water for us.
Don't waste our water, mister.
But my lawn.
Best time to water is early morning or evening. It won't dry up so quick.
Never thought of that.
Yeah.
Oh. It all started when Steve pushed the wrong button on the photocopier.
Yikes. It's set to make 10 and I need just one. What a waste.
But Canada's youth.
Yeah.
Save some trees, will ya? Start a recycling program in your office.
You got to save the water for us.
You're right. Hand me that cup.
The environment is something we've borrowed from future generations. So please don't run the water for nothing. So please recycle waste paper. It's one of hundreds of things we can do for our environment.
Let's do it now.
For a free booklet on things we can do now, contact the nearest office of Environment Canada.
We're Canada's youth.
Yeah.
Oh.
You said it. Thanks.
And now back to live coverage of the BC election.
Thank you very much, Antia. This is CITR 101.9's live coverage of the 1991 BC provincial election. On the phone with us right now from the Liberal headquarters is Chris Uren. How are you, Chris?
Oh, I'm very well, Stefan. How are you?
Very good. What's the mood like at the Liberal headquarters?
Well, things are a little slow getting going here right now. Gordon Wilson is apparently watching the results come in his riding in Powell River, and we'll be down a little bit later until very recently. Media actually outnumbered supporters, but as I'm speaking, bass drums and the like are coming into the room, so I guess things will be picking up soon. Most of the Liberals I've talked to so far bristle at any prediction that doesn't include them winning 15 to 20 seats, and actually words like historic and comparisons to the 1952 election when the SoCreds replaced the Conservatives are being bantied around.
Have any SoCreds or Liberals expressed a lot of surprise at the position they find themselves in right now?
They put on an air of being confident. They like to say that once they got Gordon Wilson in front of the voters, their upturn began, and they expected that. But frankly, I think they are surprised. They're just not admitting it.
Are you tracking the leading polls coming in right now down there?
I'm not able to, no.
Is there anyone down there doing that?
As we speak?
Yes.
No, there's not. I'm just outside. I'm just outside the room and have been for 5 to 10 minutes right now.
Okay. We've got the NDP first and the SoCred second. What do you think their reaction is going to be if they actually end up coming in third?
Okay, well, the stuff I heard initially is the Liberals seem to believe that the first polls they're getting are advanced polls, and that doesn't reflect their recent upturn in popularity. Whether or not that's true, I frankly don't know. They're going to be very disappointed if they don't finish second in this election, I think.
Well, it's interesting anyway.
We have some numbers here. Our Newswire service is constantly feeding us information about the ridings. And just to give you an idea of where we are in the vote counting so far in the process this evening, so far 20 ridings have in fact started bringing in numbers, and none of them in fact have completed, and nobody has been declared elected yet. Still 53 seats to go, but at the moment, according to the broadcast Newswire service, 14 ridings the NDP are ahead in. That compares with 6 for the Social Credits, and the Liberals are leading in one riding, and that is the Skeena riding. And apparently an independent is currently well ahead in the votes in Bulkley Valley, Stikeen, and I guess that would be Mr. Kempf way up there, who didn't in fact end up running for the Social Credits.
Chris, thank you very much for talking to us, and Chris, thank you for talking to us, and I'm sure we'll hear from you again as things pick up. What time, again, do you expect Gordon Wilson to be there?
They're talking about 9:30 to 10 o'clock.
9:30 to 10.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks, Chris. We'll talk to you again later in the evening.
Okay.
Okay, let's check in with Phil. Phil has some more up-to-date numbers here.
The TV seems to be giving us some better up-to-date numbers here. Right now, the NDP have 39 seats, or leading in 39 regions, the Liberals in 7, the Social Credit in 11, and there are 2 others. Right now, this means, of course, that if this keeps leading, the NDP will have a majority government.
You're listening to live coverage. Thank you very much, Phil. Phil is keeping an eye on the television set forth. Phil O'Keefe, one of our many production assistants here in the studio. Quite a crowded place it's proving to be this evening. You are listening to live election coverage from CITR at the University of BC, and we are trying as we can to have a look at issues in this election that reflect students and certainly the Point Grey riding, which UBC comprises a large part of. On the phone with us right now to talk about student issues is Brad Levine. He's the BC chairperson of the Canadian Federation of Students, an organization which has been actively involved in the BC election so far. Brad, do you think that the election issues got the attention that they deserve so far in this election?
No, I would say not. It's unfortunate we didn't see many candidates come out discussing where posting an education lies on their priority list. We did see coverage from the New Democratic Party. They had freeze the fees on a lot of their material as well. They also publicized overcrowding on a lot of the materials and a lot of the advertisements that went into campus newspapers. Other than that, we saw very little, a lot of apologies from the Social Credit Party and absolutely nothing from the Liberal Party. So in that respect, coming from the parties themselves, it was quite disappointing. In the mainstream media, we had a couple of good surges. One on for the press conference that we had a couple days ago, as well at the beginning of the campaign, around our CBC ad and stuff like that. A bit of coverage, but disappointing.
Can you what happened again with that CBC ad? They rejected your ad?
Well, that's right. They somewhere in the CBC's policy, the television branch's policy, they don't allow advocacy advertising. Anything that sways public opinion on a public issue, like funding of post-secondary education. So when we went to run our ads during the election campaign, we got very good receptions from UTV as well as BCTV and their affiliates in the north. But the CBC wrote us a nice little letter saying, "Sorry, we cannot run your ad due to our policies," which was disappointing. But in a sense, it generated a bit of hype about the ad itself, and I think as a result, we got more attention than actually we were hoping for. So that was looked upon very favorably. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned that the NDP were probably the most favorable party as far as their electioneering went towards higher education issues. One of their big proposals was to freeze tuition fees. What kind of response did you hear about that from students? Certainly here at the University of BC, that was a fairly popular move. Did you get a similar sort of response?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's something that the Federation's been calling for quite some time. But, I mean, a lot of the people who watched the Ontario election last year and saw that the Ontario NDP, who promised the same thing, but they didn't push it as hard as the British Columbia Democratic Party did, were greatly disappointed, a bit cynical. And we wanted to take a very cautious approach to it. We didn't want to seem that that was our only wish or goal from the new government. But It was quite favorable across the province. People were really looking forward to it, and actually we've already begun work on making sure that that the new government not only freezes tuition fees, but they freeze it for some time, so that it will have an impact, so that we can allow all British Columbians, regardless of their economic background, to enroll in post-secondary education.
Another thing that came up with the NDP was a letter in the UBC where the CFS made a proposal where they requested a 15% increase in funding for education, which the NDP flatly rejected. What was your response to that?
Well, that was our call. That's a little disappointing right off the bat. We felt a little disappointed. What we see is that our immediate short-term call is for returning of funding for the institutions to return to the 1981-82 levels. Now, currently, we're about what we thought would at least bring us up to date in real dollar terms from what we would be if we continued on the same path at the 1981-82 levels, and then take into account this year's inflation rate, which we just guessed or estimated that it would be approximately 7%, province-wide. So funding for the institutions, 15%. Flatly rejected by the NDP, that's fine. That's something we can work on. Funding towards the institutions and per-student funding are probably going to be on our top priority list when we go into to lobby the new government.
Now, you did a lot of lobbying in the campaign that's just wrapped up. I mean, you had these TV election ads that were not rejected by the various television stations and so on. You must have had quite a budget for this election.
Well, we made it a top priority in this year's budget, and actually we approximately $10,000 were spent on the television ad, and we hit a lot of people on that, and we'll be using that as well in the future. The other things like the pamphlets, we had a banner. A lot of the work that we did was did not cost anything. We had a lot of students mobilized from just a couple of the schools in the Vancouver area, and there's been work done around the province. We just made it a top priority because we know that that the window of opportunity that an election brings, we can make a lot of changes in 4 short weeks. And we thought that would be a financial as well as putting a lot of our resources. That would be a top priority to do. So I think it was well spent and a fairly good campaign.
So now, I mean, all the ballots have been cast, and in the next 45 minutes or so, I guess we'll know who the election is. Maybe who's won the election, rather, maybe even sooner than that. What are you guys going to do from here on? Presumably, the lobbying doesn't stop here. You're going to continue.
Oh yeah. It's actually just beginning. What we do right now is we're preparing a brief to the new government, and we're going to be actively getting a caucus meeting, and we might do that with the faculty associations as well to give it more weight. And we'll be going there into the caucus with our list of priorities on and review what the last 10 years, especially restraint, has done to the post-secondary education system. That's where it's really going to pick up on as well. New contacts with a new minister and new staff, things like that. Yeah, our lobbying, actually, this is from here on in, from here in the next, let's say, 6 to 8 weeks, this is where the majority of our work gets done, because we have to make sure that we get the things that the system requires in the first budget and in the first round of legislation, in the first round. Other than, like, what we're seeing is our colleagues in Ontario now have a real uphill battle getting things like tuition fees frozen, because the first budget did not bring them, for example, a freeze on tuition fees. So we want to make sure that we get our major priorities right away in the first budget and in the first round of legislation.
Well, we'll let you go, Brad. Thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
Brad Levine is the BC Chair of the Canadian Federation of Students, and he's joined us on the line tonight in our live election coverage.
And right now with us on the line is Luke Dinsdale. He is with the NDP at their headquarters down at the Robson Square Media Centre. Hi, Luke.
Good afternoon, Seth.
Good evening, Luke. One thing actually I should pass on, and which will probably interest the people that are around you, is that we do have some results in from UBC, and Darlene Mazzari is leading, she hasn't won it yet, with 315 to Barry Burke, the Liberals, 271 votes. We don't have any numbers yet for the SOCR. We can't confirm the number we do have, so right now we can definitely say it's way behind. So the NDP is leading in this riding. That must make the NDP feel good, and from the results we see on TV, they've got other reasons to feel good too. What's the mood like?
The mood down here is very excited. The room is filled quite rapidly, and a lot of the NDP representatives are having a great time. I was speaking to Sylvia Bishop, who is the vice president of the NDP, and she was basically expecting nothing less than an NDP majority, obviously. I was talking to her about Darlene's chances, and she ran with Darlene in 86, and it's no surprise that Darlene is taking it, according to her, of course. Apart from that, we spoke to Bill Bell, who's the media representative, and Ken Giorgetti, who's the representative for the labor movement in BC. And basically everybody's expecting just a big win for the NDP.
I must comment that I know you haven't been able to hear our interviews with Chris at the Liberal headquarters and also with Bill at the Socred, but the mood is quite different. There's absolutely no activity right now. Is Mike Harcourt there yet?
Mark is sitting somewhere upstairs. He hasn't shown up yet, but as soon as he gets here, I imagine it'll be a mad rush. Right now, people are just having a great time. Everybody's smiling, cameras everywhere, and just it's a party.
Any comments on the Liberals' success this election down there?
The Liberals the results that I was, the people I was talking to were saying that the Liberal results are quite surprised. They weren't expecting this much of a Liberal turnout, and basically it came quite unexpected.
Any apprehension about their possible results this evening?
Nothing yet. Nobody's really expecting. The only thing they're expecting is an NDP majority. The only question is whether or not the Liberals will form the opposition party. But to the people I've talked to, apparently they don't have a chance. But things are not turning out the way they were expected to.
Have any of the NDP supporters down there expressed any kind of relief that the election campaign is over? It was fairly smooth for the NDP compared to the Socreds.
I don't imagine people were basically expecting the results, and there's been no sort of surprise on anything. Anyway, I have to get off the phone. I've got somebody else.
You've got reporters
That's
trying
right.
to get you off the phone. Thanks, Luke. We'll talk to you again later on.
Okay, talk to you later, Stefan.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Thanks.
Sorry, Mary, didn't mean to cut you off there. That was Luke Dinsdale, our reporter from CITR News. He's down at the NDP election headquarters. That's in the Robson Square Media Center, and it sounds like quite a party. Now, Mary, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say I'm quite surprised at Barry Burke's results here. We've got Mazzari at 350 and Barry Burke at 271. And judging for anyone who was on campus at the all-candidates meeting, that is a big surprise.
I guess that relates more to something that we were talking about earlier, the Liberal phenomenon not being a function of who the candidates are or where they've come from. Right back at the beginning of this election, they were polling at sort of 5 and 6% in some ridings. The Gordon Wilson on the debate seems to have changed everything around. Suddenly the Liberals are an entity. People are voting for people that they hadn't heard of 2 weeks ago.
I think so. Barry Burke was brought in a week into the campaign itself, and he really didn't even have, at the candidate meeting, which I guess was 3 weeks ago, he didn't really have a good grip on the issues even at that point, so he should be quite happy about that.
Let's break in here and go to Phil. We do have some more results in this riding, actually. 61 out of 92 polls reporting still puts Mazzari ahead. And Phil, what else did you have?
Vancouver Little Mountain, this may be a surprise, Dr. Tom Perry, the NDP candidate, is losing quite handily to the Liberal candidate. I think that's a kind of a surprise, Stefan.
Yeah, I would say. I thought Dr. Perry would do quite well.
That certainly is. Tom Perry was going to be one of the safe seats for the NDP. And what are the numbers there? I don't have them in front of me.
Right now, the NDP are leading in 41. There are some elected candidates. They haven't shown which ones they are. NDP leading in 41, Liberal in 17, Social Credit in 9, and Other in 1.
And how handily is Dr. Tom Perry being whipped in Little Mountain?
I think it was by 200 votes in the last count.
Yeah, okay, so we're still waiting for results there, but that could turn out to be something of a surprise. But then always at this stage in an election campaign, we start seeing these trends, and oftentimes in the little pockets at individual polls, that when you're dealing with numbers like 200 and 250 out of 15,000, I mean, these things don't really indicate a trend necessarily at this stage in the game.
It's very hard to tell. We won't be able to tell until they start giving us some elected seats.
This is CITR's coverage of the 1991 election, and just a mention of some of the people we haven't heard from yet, but we do expect to hear from Charlene Azam, who is a CITR volunteer. She will be at the NDP local headquarters, probably also in a very good mood, because, of course, it looks like Darlene Mazzari is on her way to winning in this riding. Darlene Mazzari also is expected to give us a call. Barry Burke, the Liberal candidate, Richard Wright. We also hope to hear in about 4 or 5 minutes or so from Caroline Welling, who is one of the Liberal campaigners, who will talk about how the campaign has gone for them. Mary Herman is here right now, and let's go to Ian for a moment.
Yes, indeed, Stefan. I was simply going to say that I observed that the NDP in this riding, Darlene Mazzari, out here at Vancouver Point Grey, last week managed to book a place for their victory party. They were that sure of what was going to go on, and managed to get a band and everything lined up at Brock House for tonight. So they've certainly been looking that way for some time now. And as you say, we're expecting a call at some point this evening from Ms. Mazzari herself to find out what is going on there.
And on a side note, we can say that CITR is also involved with the NDP victory party in this riding because they're doing the mobile sound service of all things.
That's right. We are, in fact, the band that I mentioned, CITR. We've got a couple of DJs down there, and indicates no preference on us. I mean, we're not biased in any way, of course. Not. Our journalistic integrity remains intact.
One thing, actually, while we have a moment here, while we're waiting for people to call, let's go to one of the clips of the debate. This is the debate that was held on the CBC. Of course, there was a lawsuit involved, and then the CBC decided to let the Liberals participate anyways, and look what it did to their support. The first clip we have is from Rita Johnston, and it's quite early on in the debate, and it's she takes the opportunity to criticize the honesty and integrity with faulting that with the NDP, and here's that clip.
But I can tell you that the honesty and integrity issue in this campaign has nothing to do with social credit, and it has everything to do with Mike Harcourt and the NDP. They table a booklet with a number of promises. Then they table a budget with costs. They don't allow for those promises. We ask the leader to outline the costs of his programs. No way. We want you tonight, Mike, to tell us the truth. Give us the cost of your programs.
Right,
the
Madam
people
Premier,
of BC have to know.
There will be an opportunity for that. That is your time.
And there's Kevin Evans breaking in there. Which, if we look back at it, I mean, we can talk about the debate in a moment, but it wasn't much of a debate, as everybody agrees. Phil, you have an update on some results from the interior.
From the interior, there are two seats that have been elected now, and they're both NDP. So we're starting to see ridings where we've got elected members, so we'll probably be seeing... Hopefully, we'll be seeing more results quite fast.
Now, which ridings are there? Do we know which ridings those are in the interior?
They didn't specify them. I just saw them on an interior north.
Because the interior of BC has long been a SOCRED stronghold, and they were certainly ridings that the SOCREDs were counting on probably being able to hold their own in, despite what has been otherwise for them something of an annoying election campaign, with little things gnawing at them the back and forth, with a number of flaws that they found in their campaign. And it certainly, of all the campaigns, it certainly wasn't the smoothest of all of them. If you discount Gordon Wilson's skyrocketing popularity due to the television debate that we just heard a portion of, still the SOCRED campaign can't be said to have been flawless.
We also now have a Liberal candidate in Vancouver,
Quilchena. Yeah.
Cowrie is elected for the Liberals.
That's actually quite a significant...
That is, certainly is.
I believe that was an undecided, the Vancouver Sun referred to as a toss-up.
Yeah.
In that riding, and it is now a Liberal riding.
It certainly was. Art Cowie is certainly has been touted as one of the Liberals, the star candidates. That Vancouver Quilchena is very close here to the UBC campus. A lot of UBC students, in fact, will live in Vancouver Quilchena. It starts just the other side of the university endowment lands here, and I imagine a large number of the listenership this evening are, in fact, in Vancouver Quilchena. And Art Cowie is now your new MLA.
That's okay. Interesting. Go ahead, Phil.
Sorry, just an update on the leading elected board here. It's changing rapidly. I can't keep track of it. NDP 41 ridings, Liberal 20, Social Credit 77, and others 1. So the Liberals are kind of walking away as the opposition right now.
Its SOCRED number has not changed. Oh,
it just went up to 8. And that was a new riding reporting. I think we have 5 ridings to report still. And so it's 41 NDP, 20 Liberal, 8 Social Credit, and 1 other.
I wanted to briefly, before we talk to actually a Liberal campaign worker here on the line about the significance of that Vancouver-Quilchena riding, because longtime SoCred MLA Doug Mowat has gone down to defeat, and that's quite significant.
How long has he been in power? Does anyone know?
You put me on the spot. he's been in the seat for, I think, 16 years or so. I think it's been about 16 years.
That's going to hurt.
Yeah. That riding traditionally has been very low in support for the NDP. And Phil, we have some more.
Okay. Province-wide, there are 12 elected NDP ridings, two elected NDP or Liberal ridings, and none for the SoCreds yet.
We hope to be hearing from, I think right now, Carolyn from the Liberal Party.
Hi there.
Hi.
I find it hard to hear you. There's a lot of pandemonium in here.
Okay, we'll try to speak up a bit here. Have you heard about any of the results where your party has...
Well, I've just been manning the phones here for our polls, and it's quite unbelievable, the results. Everyone's just flabbergasted. David Mitchell's been winning at almost 50% in all the polls. We have about almost, well, 8 or 9 polls in now, and it's quite astounding. In some of them, you know, the SoCreds only have 25 or 20.
The cheer you just heard there is because Gordon Wilson was just elected in Powell River's Sunshine Coast.
Yeah, that's what's just been indicated to me across the room.
So that is, in fact, now two Liberals that we now know are definitely going to Victoria in the next session. We know that two Liberals have been elected now this evening.
Actually, Ian, that would be three.
That'll be three now. Whoa, yes. I can't keep up myself.
Wow.
You should also mention that, Carolyn, that in Vancouver, Quilchena, Art Cowie has won the riding against Doug Mowat and Stuart Herzog.
Yeah, that's what I understand. It's quite amazing because he's quite a favorite among a lot of Liberals.
So needless to say, you're in a good mood. Did you expect the election to turn around like it did?
Oh, 3 weeks ago, I couldn't have imagined this. I mean, the Liberals have been such an inconsequential issue for the last, you know, since 79, that it just, you know, we'd gotten used to losing elections. But Gordon Wilson really came in strong on the debate. And, I mean, people talk about him like he's a newcomer, but he's been around since 86. He's just been slowly, you know, establishing himself among the Liberals in the province.
If you had to look back on the election campaign and admit one fault with how your party handled itself towards the end, specifically with Gordon Wilson's backpedaling sort of on his election platform, would you say that's... why do you think that happened?
Well, I mean, that seems pretty obvious. We didn't expect, we didn't even expect to be in this situation, you know. There seemed no need to prepare a very permanent set platform because we were looking at best a couple of seats, you know. Why plan for something that, you know, just seemed impossible? And within days, they had to whip together a platform that the other two parties have had months, years to prepare for, so we were quite at a disadvantage. I think the only thing we may have done wrong is maybe not been more optimistic about it all from the outset.
Do you think there's a number of people down there who maybe joined your campaign after the debate?
Well, there's a lot of, disgruntled SoCreds who have joined on. A lot of people who have been apathetic about politics in general in BC who have joined on. But as for the campaign organizers, no, they're all Liberals who have just been inactive for a while who've decided that, you know, there's something worth fighting for here.
Carolyn, thank you very much. You've been in the West Van headquarters, West Van Garibaldi riding of the election, and where, in fact, your candidate has, in fact, just taken a seat, do we now know? Or he's still ahead? Do you have any more results
there? That's what they're saying, he's going to take it, but total results aren't in yet.
Okie dokie. Well, the Liberals are certainly having a good night, and we thank you for joining us very much.
Okay, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. That's Carolyn. She's a campaign worker at the riding of West Vancouver Garibaldi. Getting too excited here for my own tongue, and the Liberals are, in fact, ahead in that riding. We now have Liberals in several ridings. You're listening to live coverage from CITR FM, and it's time for a news break with Jane Tilley and Mark Dinsdale with sports. And they joined us in the studio. Time for the news with Jane Tilley.
Okay, thanks, Ian. There's still no sign of an armed forces aircraft missing off Nova Scotia. Rescue officials believe the plane may have used up its fuel and been forced to ditch in the Atlantic, 30 kilometres south of Halifax. The CT-133 disappeared late this afternoon during an exercise, but no distress call was received. Six Navy and Coast Guard ships and five aircraft are scouring the ocean about 30 to 40 kilometres south of Halifax, and the search will continue throughout the night. The two men aboard the jet were based at Canadian Forces Base Shearwater. Elsewhere, Federal Constitutional Affairs Minister Joe Clark says Canada won't prosper like other major Western powers unless the constitutional crisis is resolved. Joe Clark says that while Canadians have been debating the Constitution, other Western powers have been building their economies. Clark says in this debate, the one thing for sure is that things will get worse if the country isn't held together. Ontario's Premier Bob Rae says the province's unique characteristics of breadth and diversity may be helpful in healing the country's constitutional problems. He calls Ontario a microcosm of Canada. And Rae says that many of the residents can understand the alienation felt by other parts of the country. Rae has pushed for the inclusion of a social charter in a new constitution to guarantee the right to social programs and is backed recognizing the inherent right of natives to self-government. The dispute over fishing lodges in the Queen Charlotte Islands is back in court tomorrow. Three Haida Indians are charged with violating an order against interfering with lodge operations. Elsewhere, about 3,000 grain farmers have staged a rally in Weyburn, Saskatchewan today. They say government aid programs aren't enough to deal with the crippling effects of plunging grain prices. Premier Grant Devine says a food tax may be one way of resolving the farm crisis. A geographical expert says Quebec should be able to maintain its borders if it becomes independent. Henri Dorion spoke to a legislative committee studying sovereignty. He said while legal experts consider the Gulf of St. Lawrence federal territory, the province is disputing that. In international news, Commonwealth leaders meeting in Harare, Zimbabwe, have agreed to drop some sanctions against South Africa with ANC leader Nelson Mandela's blessings. Economic sanctions will continue, but restrictions on travel and contacts between officials and individuals will be lifted. Prime Minister Mulroney later said that substantial progress has been made in South Africa. A Texaco oil rig has broken free of its tow lines and is adrift in 12-metre waves in the North Sea, but Coast Guard officials say the crew of 80 isn't in any immediate danger. Elsewhere in Yugoslavia, three of Croatia's...